If you demonize work for 18 years to your kid, don't act surprised when they don't want to get a job. Like, if you've spent the entire childhood going, work is the worst, I hate what I have to do, I hate my job, then of course they graduate from college and are like, I don't want to join the workforce. That sounds, I learned for 18 years, it's terrible.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Paula Ferris Show. I am your host, Paula Ferris. If you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, I'm so glad you're here. And if you're watching on YouTube, what do you guys think? The hair is a little bit lighter. We went lighter at the hairdresser. I'm not really sure, but would love your feedback on it. Speaking of feedback, you guys, could you rate the show? Could you maybe write a quick review? It'll take you 10 seconds. It would mean so much if you just took a moment out of your day when you're done listening to just rate the show, keep these conversations going. And if you want to keep the conversations going, the best way to do that is to make sure you're subscribed to my free personal newsletter. It goes out every 2 weeks. Giveaways. I share my favorites, favorite products, favorite recipes, things I'm reading, encouraging content to help you live your best life. And I'm just here to encourage you. It's one thing that I really love to do. And I think you're going to be really encouraged by this next series that we're talking about, something you have asked me about, and it is work-life balance. Yes, we just wrapped a series on relationships. We had Dr. Henry Cloud on the show last week. John was my co-host. But this conversation that we're kicking off today is a conversation about work-life balance. And I don't really even think balance is a real thing. I've heard some people call it work-life integration. But how do we, especially as parents, ditch the guilt of working? So many of us have a ton of guilt because we work. I know this is the reason why I pumped the brakes and eventually left TV news, because I had so much guilt about being a working mom. Well, I had an aha moment. And that aha moment is because a friend of mine named John Acuff, you've probably heard of him. He's an author. He's a speaker, just incredible guy, father of two. And he helped me to ditch the guilt of working. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to help you ditch the guilt of being a working parent. I will say, I share a story in this conversation. I missed my kid's first day of school this past year. And normally I would have felt so much guilt about it, and I would have projected that guilt on my kids. But because of what John shared with me and what he's going to share with you, I felt absolutely no guilt. So today, I hope you have an aha moment like I had an aha moment when John shared some of his techniques and just really shared his wisdom in this space. So without further ado, my friend, your new friend, John Acuff, on how we can ditch the guilt of being a working parent. Enjoy. Yeah, I'm excited.
I took a shower for this. I'm glad we're recording video and audio.
I took a shower for it too. That's fantastic.
We're both ready. We're both ready. That's great. Professionals.
I took a vigorous walk.
You've been on TV a bunch. I'm an amateur. Like you, I think, didn't Jimmy Fallon like blow up your book when one of your books?
Yeah, he did. I don't know if he blew it up, but I was on the
same time. Well, he touched it. Didn't he hold it in his hand? That counts.
He did. He touched it. He held it up. He said something about it. He asked people to read it. And he was referring to his kids. Wait, was that the kids' book? No, it wasn't the kids' book. It was You Don't Have to Carry It Out. Gosh, you know my history better
than I
do, John.
I'm paying attention. Yeah, I'm paying attention. I'm out there.
John, I'm so excited that we just came in hot, because this is just an indicator of how the conversation is going to go, which I'm so pumped up about. It's good to connect with you again. You and I know one another from the Global Leadership Summit, which we've both been involved in. We've kept in touch. I'm a huge fan of you, and I'm a huge fan of all the content that you're putting out there in the world. You are a dad of two daughters.
18. One's not a teen anymore. 18 and 20. So I don't even know the phrase. Like, I'm a dad of two daughters is what I'll say. And then
two amazing. You're a girl dad.
Two young women, I guess.
Young ladies.
Young ladies. Yeah.
That feels a little like 1950s. That's
weird. I don't like when people call their wife bride. I just a personal thing. Like when somebody goes, this is my bride. Like, because Jenny never says, where is my groom? Have you met my groom? if somebody does it and it lights up your wife's heart, by all means, keep doing it. It's just always weird to me.
I call John my hubby.
You don't call me your groom. You're not like, have you met my groom?
Have you met my groom? This is the 1890s or something,
no,
right?
No, you don't say that.
Okay. You know what you say? You say things that kind of blow my mind as a parent. and just as a human being in general, John, I wanted to have you on because this is a huge question I get from our listeners and viewers. It's like, how do you share work with your kids?
Yeah.
How do you talk about work? But also, like, how do you get your kids to buy into what you're doing? And you said something to me that literally blew my mind, has been so revelatory in terms of how I parent and how I talk about things. Mm-hmm. And this was a conversation we had about a year ago. And you were like, Paula, kids have mirror neurons. And without getting too scientific, I want you to explain what this means. What are mirror neurons and how does it impact our children and how does it impact our parenting and how we talk to our kids about things?
Yeah. So this came up when I was working on a book called Soundtracks about mindset and overthinking, that essentially your kids reflect back what you're putting out. Like, because that's how their brains work. They reflect back what you're putting out. And I think that's true of a lot of life. There's been so many studies. I just saw one the other day from the Kellogg School of Business that sitting within 25 feet of a toxic coworker or a high performing coworker changes how you perform. It was a $12,000 hit in your performance if you sat next to somebody, near somebody toxic.
25. I'm glad I work from home.
Yeah.
Although
exactly.
My husband, sometimes
your
he's
groom
a little toxic.
Is so high performing.
Groom is right around the corner in his office, and he can be a little toxic. So
we'll keep an eye on him. So I think that's part of it. So the story where you're referring to specifically is, I was being really negative about business travel. So I was like, because a lot of parents feel guilt about it. And my wife,
100%
like, oh,
we do.
I'm so sorry. I'll be gone. I'll be home in 3 sleeps. Like I was doing the whole, like I was leaving for Nam every time I would go on a 2-day business trip to Tulsa. And so my wife pulled me aside and was like, hey, you're teaching them sadness right now. Like, hey, you're asking them to hold your guilt because you don't want to hold it. And she said, we're not mad you're doing this. We're proud of you for pursuing a dream. We're proud of you for working hard. So we need to celebrate your exit, not shame it. Because what I would do is I would come to my kid and go, hey, you know how you're enjoying life? I'd like to ruin that for a minute and give you a lot. Like, I'm a terrible parent. This is a terrible thing. And then the flip side of that, which you and I talked about, is if you demonize work for 18 years to your kid, don't act surprised when they don't want to get a job.
That's
like,
right.
If you've spent the entire childhood going, work is the worst, I hate what I have to do, I hate my job, then of course they graduate from college and are like, I don't want to join the workforce. I learned for 18 years, it's terrible. So what we do instead, like one of our soundtracks that we say as a family came from a friend of mine named Shane. One is bags of gold are heavy. Bags of gold are heavy. They take work. And sometimes you got to go pick them up in Tulsa because that's where they are. Like they take getting up early. Like good things take good work. So we say bags of gold are heavy. And so like if my daughter's studying, she's doing 5 ACT practice tests. We're like, good for you. Good for you. Bags of gold are heavy. And if you get that, you know, if you get a certain level, you can get scholarships. Like, awesome. You're doing the hard work. So we find ways to celebrate work. We're not dishonest about it. We say it's challenging. We say it's hard, but we also talk about the great things that come with it. So if we were at Disney World when my kids were young, I would say, remember that time I missed that thing because I was in California at that other thing? That helped pay for this moment. And those things are connected. They're not divorced. They're connected. And we put a priority on, you know, giving our best and doing our best and recognizing that it's connected. So we're really deliberate about giving them that. Like another thing I say is if you want a hardworking 16-year-old, teach a 6-year-old hard work and give them 10 years to practice. If you want a kind 18-year-old, teach them kindness at 8 and give them 10 years to practice. Mm-hmm. So Jenny, my wife, is always saying we're not raising kids, we're raising adults. We're not raising kids, we're raising adults. So what are we teaching them in this moment that we want to give them lots of time to practice?
Mm-hmm. Going back to that story, so John, your wife, Jenny, was upset with you because she's like, here I am, you know, trying to hold down the fort.
I was wrecking it. I was.
You were totally wrecking.
I was stirring up the kids.
Yes,
I was stirring up the kids and then leaving.
Yeah, like, but tell what would happen. You'd call them up and you'd be like, I miss you so much.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm the worst. Or, you know, I don't want to have to do this. I don't, you know. And I've even seen friends of mine who are speakers complain about travel on Instagram. And I always go, you're insulting the client. You should be so grateful. Like, don't go like, I can't, because the client is then going, hey, we're sorry we tried to pay you and have you do something you love. Our bad. Our bad for that. Like, don't do that. Like,
yeah,
I want it to be, a celebration. And so I would stir the kids up. I'd get them emotional. I'd get them sad. And I'd be like, deuces, Jenny, like, good luck with this.
Yeah.
Like, they seem like, now that I've got them crying. And so it's little things. It's, hey, I get to go to Orlando this week. I'm so like, dad's got to go to Orlando for 2 days. Here's when I'll be home. I can't wait to see you when I get home. Like, here, you know, we're going to FaceTime, whatever. But my FaceTime isn't going to be, I'm desperately missing you. Oh, no, I wish I was there. This is so hard. Like, no, I'm not creating that atmosphere and then asking them to jump into it, because as the parent, you're the atmosphere creator. So I don't want to stir that up. I'd rather be positive.
And it's the mirror neuron, like you said. Yeah. A mirror is just reflecting. That's all it is. And the way that we talk about it, they're going to pick up on it. If we talk about it negatively and we're like, daddy's gone, I miss him so much. Or if we talk about it like, I'm gone, I miss you so much, I'm a terrible parent. They're going to say, daddy's a terrible parent.
They're going to parrot that, of course.
They're going to parrot and mirror everything that we put out there. This, for me, gave me so much freedom. So, John, in 2023, I missed the kids' first day of school. Mm-hmm. I've never done that.
Which day? Like what grades?
Fourth grade, eighth grade, and 10th grade. First day of school. I have never done that. And it's because I was hosting the Global Leadership Summit. Well,
yeah, amazing.
Which, I mean, the dates are set and all of that. We started earlier than normal in the 2023 school year. And I went back to this conversation that you and I had. And I said, I have two choices here. Do I, A, talk about it like, I'm so sorry, I'm a terrible mom, I've never done this before, I promise to call you every single day, and just invite that guilt and then dump it onto them? I have chills just talking about it right now, because I remember being on stage and telling everybody, hey, it's my kid's first day of school, but I'm here with you. Or do I conversely talk about it with my kids? Hey, you guys, I know that this probably isn't the right timing and I've never missed the first day of school before, but mommy has a great opportunity to really go shine her light, to meet some incredible people. I then invited them into the conversation and told them and shared with them what was going to be happening, who was going to be speaking, the kind of experiences. And they then had questions about it. And I remember coming back and all the conversations that I had with them while I was gone, and I was only gone like 3-4 days. Mm-hmm. They were like, Mom, I hope you're having a good time. We can't wait to hear all about it. John, you gave me the mirror neuron thing, gave me so much freedom from the guilt I have in working or whatever it may be, the way that I parent. It's really changed everything, because I realize now, again, watershed aha moment, the way I speak about things, my kids will then mirror that behavior and mirror and echo my sentiments. So if I put something negative out there, they'll say something negative. So I just want to say thank you. You're like a guru for me.
That's awesome. And I like to exaggerate things so I can see them clearly. And I use humor to do that. So there's the funny thing is, like, as if your kid in 20 years will be like, where did it all go downhill? Fourth grade, first day of school. You know how they say it's the most important. It's the most important first day.
It is.
It's not graduating from high school. It's not graduating from college. The pivotal moment in a young man's life, fourth day, first grade of school, like fourth grade, like you would go, no one says that. Our culture gaslights parents so much right now.
Oh, absolutely.
With stuff. So I have a senior. When you have a senior, have you had a senior yet?
No, I have a sophomore and an eighth grader and a fourth grader.
I'll give you the truth right now. You will be gaslit the entire year until this is the last moment.
You have 18 years.
They hype it and go.
They're gone.
No, well, they go, what they do is they go, this is their last bagel breakfast they'll ever have. And the school will have an event called Bagel Breakfast. And you go, they never ate a bagel in 18 years. And so there's all this, like, culture puts all this pressure on parents senior year, but then they also do it on, like, it's trickled down. We don't like long-term delayed gratification. We like short-term. So we like to do things like they graduated from kindergarten with a sign. That's new. We used to have one sign, high school graduation, but we don't want to wait. We want that instant hit of dopamine, instant hit of gratification right away. So we go, it's kindergarten graduation, it's fifth grade graduation, it's eighth grade graduation, sign, because we don't want to wait for that long term. Oh my gosh, this is the moment. So we steal joy from real big moments and spread it out. And then it puts all this extra pressure on parents to go, no, this is the first day of fourth grade.
Yeah.
This
you're going to damage them if you're going to damage, there.
Like they're going to deal heroin right after this. Like this is the thing. Like they're going to go from there. Like, do you know what I mean? Like that's what we say. And we have to talk honestly about it, or you think you're the worst parent. And then you start to compare yourself to other parents, and then you start to keep score, and you're never going to be ahead when you're keeping score. Yeah. And so then it just kind of spirals. But I think as parents, we have to be able to say, like, I would have rather been there. I'm so glad, whatever. But it was the fourth grade, first day of school. Like first day of high school is different. Sophomore, it wasn't even senior year. It was sophomore year.
I know.
Sophomore year, like, man, 10th grade is when it all happens. Like, no, it's not. It's 10th grade. Like,
So
I think we put this cultural pressure, and it's related to all these moments we feel like we have to celebrate, all these, like, an Instagram. Like, I remember we were at a birthday party once for like a 2-year-old, and the mom felt like the banner and the balloons color wise didn't match. And she said, Instagram fail. And she was putting the party on for Instagram, not the 2-year-old. The 2-year-old was still using the bathroom in their pants. They didn't care about the color scheme. That was about performing on Instagram. And so you have to understand, we're in a new weird world. And so there's new weird pressures. And I think as parents, we have to talk openly about those.
Absolutely.
Go, nah, I don't accept that one. I'm not carrying that one. I don't accept that. So I'm so glad you had. And Global Leadership Summit, you spoke to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people. And I love that not only did you not pack shame in your suitcase for that trip, you also invited your kids into a conversation where they got to be part of it.
But John, I traveled for work all the time. And I always packed shame in my suitcase.
Yeah.
If I was gone one night, the rule was mommy will get you a gift for every night she's gone. Yeah. And so can you imagine then that, like, the way that I'm already demonizing work? And here's the reality. Most parents just have to work these days. It's just the reality. But what about those parents? Like, you and I love what we do and love these calls that have been placed on our lives. A lot of parents are just working to pay the bills. They're not really enjoying their job. Like, how do you talk about it? And how do you have that conversation still in a positive way so that you're not demonizing work if you're a parent that doesn't really love the job you have, but you have to have it to put food on the table? How do you have that conversation?
Well, I think that's 100% true, because it's really tough out there. Like, every time I go to any store, I'm like, how are people doing it? Like, I don't, like, anytime I eat at a fast food restaurant either, I'm like, how are people doing it? I think it's really tough out there. I think the thing you can ask as a parent is, what do I want to teach my kids? Like, what are the character traits? What are the principles? Take the job off the table. Take the, you, because you wouldn't say, unless I love my job, I can't teach them bravery. Unless I love my job, I can't teach them discipline. Unless I love my job, I can't teach them hard work. No, take the job off the table. Your job, whether you love it or not, doesn't get to decide what character traits you teach your kids.
That's so
what
good.
You first have to do is go, I want my kids to be curious. I want to have curious kids. I want my kids to be brave. I want them to be hopeful about the future. I want them to, you know, have persistence or grit or whatever the words are. And then you go, how in my current job can I reflect that? What, you know, what can I do that shows that? Like, yeah, I don't have a perfect job. I don't have a job I love necessarily, but that might actually give me even a greater opportunity to show persistence and perseverance and grit. When I when they know, hey, it's not my favorite thing to do. I would never lie to you about that. But do you know why it matters? Because I have a commitment to this family. Do you know why I do this? That's what Bags of Gold Are Heavy is. It's like,
so good. Me,
like, I've taken more 5 a.m. flights in a week working for myself than I ever did working for 20 years for other companies, because I want to do it, because it's worth it. And it's not that I love a 5 a.m. flight. Nobody is like, man, I get to get up at 3:30 and then go to the airport. That's the best, but it's worth it. So if you have a job you don't love, you have an even greater opportunity in the face of that to go, but I still show up. I'm still passionate. Even though a lot of it's bad, I find those slivers of good and I'm still faithful to it. And I still do my best because I want to show that to my kids. That's how I would frame it.
I'm glad that we touched on that, because so many parents are working just because they have to. They don't have
100%.
A choice but to work. And thank you for giving us the words, right? And to have that conversation. I do want to share a couple of other stories, John, how the mirror neuron thing has blown up in my face. So two specific instances, I carried a ton of shame and guilt in parenting and mom guilt when I was working at ABC News. Mm-hmm. And I remember my daughter, she was probably six, and she said something to me. And she's like, if you really loved me, you'd stay at home. And you know why she said that? You know why she said that? Because I had said that to her. Because I had said those things like, I wish I could stay home like the other moms, and I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I'm a bad. I was putting that in. I was putting that out there. And so she was then repeating it. But if you ask all of my kids today, are you glad that I work? They're like, yes, mom. You know, we love to see you shine. We love that you get to provide for this family. We love that you're using, you know, the gifts and talents and that God gave you, and that mm-hmm. you're able to like really exercise your passion and the example that I am able to set about hard work and resilience and life's mm-hmm. not always fair, all those life lessons at work. But another example that killed me, and you know, women, I don't know if you can relate to this, but maybe Jenny has done this.
I live with three.
True. So you're by proxy. Absolutely. You can relate to this. I would really bash the way that I looked. I'm 48 now, but I would, when Caroline was a little bit younger, I think she was like 10 or 11 and she's 16 now. I would look at pictures around the house and be like, man, I was so much thinner in that photo. Or, you know, yeah. I look at how much younger I look in that photo. Well, one day she came into my office at ABC and she saw a picture. She's like, mom, look at how much thinner you look in this photo. And I was like, oh my gosh, why? And then I was like, oh my gosh, that's because I'm saying those things. And so especially as mothers and parents, the way we are talking about our bodies, and dads do this too, we got to be real careful. My daughter didn't think that I looked really any better or worse in that photo. She was just repeating what I put out there. That's all she was doing. It was those mirror neurons in effect. So I couldn't be offended.
That's a powerful example of the things you put out come back in, you know, slightly different words, but the same sentiment. What I'd say to anybody listening, it doesn't mean you have to have the perfect words or say the perfect thing all the time. Sometimes it means you just have to apologize. Like, I think mm-hmm. that's one of the greatest lessons for parents is learning how to apologize when you've messed up and going, hey, I said that. Here's why I didn't, you know, here's what I meant by that. Even just telling your kids, I was afraid of this and this is what happened. Like, mm-hmm. I was afraid. I overreacted because I was afraid. And saying like, I get afraid, and you have the option to be afraid too in this house. Like, you have the, you know, you can be afraid, you can be upset, you can be angry, whatever. You have access to the full range of emotions in this house, you know? And so sometimes it's, you're going to say the wrong thing. You're going to do the wrong thing. I have a friend named Al Andrews who said, he's a counselor, that he's just going to give his kids a list of the things he did wrong so they can save some money on counseling. Like, they can just walk in on day one and be like, here's the 10 ways my dad messed me up the most, you know? And then they can, that the counselor won't get a boat. They'll only get a small jet ski with the amount of counseling they do.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, that as a parent, like, you know, it's going to be something. I remember a great parenting lesson for me. We were at a pumpkin patch, like in the fall. This is when they were like 4 and 2. And we were leaving and we had like an hour drive back, and my 4-year-old jumped in a big puddle, and I totally overreacted. Like, she had jumped into lava. Like, I was like, no. Cause I was kind of picturing, she's soaking wet in the car. We got to ride for an hour. We don't have a change of clothes, like all mm-hmm. these things. And this old man who was probably, I was 25 at the time. He was probably 70. He was like, son, it's just a puddle. It's just a puddle. And I felt initially this deep shame of, he's right. And then I felt this learning of, no, he's right. So much of life is a puddle. And if we, like, that's one of my soundtracks. It's just a puddle. It's just a puddle. There's serious things that happen, of course. But a lot of the things that I'm tempted to overreact to as a parent, a single bad grade, 10 minutes coming home late, a messy room. I always joke, my kids can't see the dishwasher. Like, they can see the sink, but 12 inches away,
no,
they can't see the dishwasher. Like, it's close. They're practically spooning those two things. But when they have a dirty dish, they put them in the sink.
Uh-huh.
Those are puddles. They're puddles and puddles and puddles. So that became a soundtrack for me of, where am I overreacting? And is this just a puddle? It's just a puddle.
Yep. That's so good. You mentioned something that's really important too, and I've talked about it. So I did a January series where I talked about things I'm learning as a mom, a wife, a leader, about feeling unqualified. One of the things in relationships is to be quick to say, I'm sorry, and even quicker to say, I forgive you, so that you have that, like you said, in this house, we can make mistakes. In this house, we say we're sorry. In this house, we are quick to forgive. But I mentioned you specifically in the series when I was talking about feeling unqualified and trying new things, because John, I think we can get in our head and we can tell ourselves negative things. It's those negative soundtracks. And something that you say really helps to get me out of that space. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it helpful? And usually, like, if you throw whatever it is against those three things, you're rarely getting past number one. But if it is true, is it kind? No. Is it helpful? Absolutely not. Can you talk a little bit about that and how important that is to bounce whatever that feeling of unqualification or whatever that soundtrack is against those three questions?
Well, so yeah, that came from this book I wrote called Soundtracks about mindset. And I wrote it because I needed it. The best books I write are the ones I need. And so I always say, like, you can tell when a book's been written by somebody's hands, but not their heart. And this for me was a heart book. So I needed to change my mindset and I needed to learn how to do that. And the three questions really helped with that. So the first question is it true? Because one of the greatest mistakes you make in life is assuming all your thoughts are true. And the reason you do that is because they're delivered in the voice you're most familiar with, your own. Think about it. It's the voice you've heard the most in your entire life. So we tend to just trust it, even though your thoughts have lied to you again and again and again. Everyone listening to this right now has had a thought tell them, that person's so mad at you. They're so mad. They're so mad. And you lose sleep about it. You think about it. You finally run into them and they forgot the thing you thought they were mad about. And you never go back to your thought and go, hey, you got me on that one. But next time, I'm not going to believe as fast. Just believe. So let's take, I'm the worst mom. Let's just pick that one up. I'm the worst mom. Is that true? No, it's not. It's Hitler's mom. You're at best, you're silver medal. Like, there's worst moms. Like, no, you're not the worst mom in the world.
I'm sorry. That's terrible.
Yeah, you're not. You're not the worst mom. Yeah. So number one, is it true? No, you're not the worst mom. Number two, is it helpful? And the is it helpful is, when you think this again and again and again, does it push you forward or pull you back? Does it lead to forward momentum or get you stuck? If you tell yourself over and over and over again, I'm the worst mom, I'm the worst mom, I'm the worst mom, does that make you want to be better? No, it gets you stuck in shame. Does that move you forward? No, it gets you stuck in regret and embarrassment. And then the third one is it kind? And the simple trick there is, if you said it to a friend, would they still want to be your friend? And so I'll give you an example for kids, because we're talking about kids a little bit too. My youngest daughter, McCray, bombed a biology test. And she's talked about this before publicly, so it's not a secret, but she got like a 42. And that was with the curve. Like, I don't even know how that math works.
They not out her. Of 50. It's not a 42
no,
out
of 100.
Out of 100.
They curved her into like a bonus F. And so the next month, a month after, she's got another biology test. And the night before, she's telling herself, remember you failed the last one. Remember you failed the last one. Remember you failed the last one. Now, first question, is it true? You know what? In this case, it is. That's why you need more than one question. It was true. Second question, though, is it helpful? Is it helpful the night before a test to tell yourself 100 times, remember you failed the last one, you could fail this next one. Remember? Of course not. Third question, is it kind? And I said to her, Cray, if a friend of yours texted you 100 times tonight and said, hey, McCray, I just want to remind you, you failed the last one. You failed the last one. You failed the last one. Would that be a friend or a monster? She was like, a monster. And I said, well, if you wouldn't let a friend talk to you that way, don't let McCray talk to you, McCray, that way. And so those are the three questions. And often if you'll take a breath in the middle of the chaos, in the middle of kind of the stress, if you'll take a breath and go, is it true? And again, sometimes it is true, which is why you need multiple questions. Because very rarely do you get through all three and go, no, it's not. It's not helpful. It's not kind. And they're simple. They're easy to remember. And they give you great pause to the thoughts you're letting run on repeat. And it'll make you go, oh, I need to retire those.
That's so good. John, you have a big, is that a banner behind you?
Oh, I didn't, I wanted it to be subtle. Is that, it's not
no.
subtle? Okay.
Well, I would say it's subtle. Maybe the highlighter.
Could bright make yellow.
It. Exactly.
8 feet tall.
So, this is your latest project, All It Takes Is a Goal. And before we go, you talk specifically in this book, and something I think can help our community is how building an intentional community can help you reach your goals. And again, the book is All It Takes Is a Goal. You're like the goal guru. So how can building an intentional community help us achieving our goals as parents?
Well, your big goals take big communities. We're not designed to do this alone. We're 100% not. I'll give you two examples. So a friend who's another parent is an archive for you. And what do I mean by archive? I mean, they remember the good moments and they remember the hard things you've already done. So in the middle of parenting, what will happen is you got a 15-year-old and there's something going wrong. and you'll say to your friend, it's never been this hard. I'm not qualified. I can't do this. And they'll go, wait a second. Well, no. And they pull out these memories. They archive. There are also mirrors for you too. They'll reflect back what's really going on. So you need friends like that. You need a community to help carry you in moments like that, to help be somebody who encourages you in moments like that. And so I'm very deliberate about how do we encourage and build more communities, especially because we're so lonely right now. The Surgeon General, for the first time ever, just released a statement that loneliness is as toxic as drug abuse and a bunch of other diseases in our country. And then you think about all the ways we're isolated, and then you take the pandemic, and it was like an isolation supernova. You know, it only increased isolation. It only increased us being separated. Even just little things, like I was thinking about this today with my wife. The idea of a silent disco where you go somewhere and you listen to headphones and like on your own music and dance with somebody is just a different form of isolation. You're near people, but you're having an isolated, lonely experience. Like our culture is so lonely, and I don't think understands how lonely they really are. And the joke I do sometimes is I know I'm lonely because I work at home when I overtalk the UPS guy. When like he drops a box off, I'm like, hey, Gary, how's the family? How are the kids doing? And he's like, dude, I want to leave this box and then I want to go back to that brown truck. This is our whole relationship. And so I can isolate too, but you have to be deliberate about it. You have to work at it. And I'll give you one simple way, because I love kind of boiling things down to action. Just encourage one friend a day for 7 days in a row and just see what happens. Like I did that experiment with 30 friends because I felt lonely. I was like, okay, what do I do with that? I want more connections. I want more community. So all I did was I made a list of 30 people from my phone. It was pretty easy. And then every morning I got up and I texted one of them and I would say, hey, Jeremy, anytime I think about creativity, I think of you. Hope you're doing well. Or, hey, Mike, I was thinking about that football game we went to. That was the best. And there wasn't a single person who responded with, this is the worst day for me to get this. I'm so mad you sent me this today. 90% of them said, you have no idea how much I needed some encouragement today. You have no idea. And at the end of the 30 days, guess what? Yeah. I had a better community. I had better friendships. It wasn't like I went on a vision quest. It wasn't difficult. I just was deliberate. And I made it easy on myself by making the list ahead of time. Because I knew if I got to day 5, I'd wake up and go, who do I know? Who do I? So I just-
Gary, the UPS guy.
Yeah, Gary. I just thought, yeah. And then as a parent, imagine if you took that same principle and for 7 days in a row, you encouraged one of your kids. Like, and you said, you found 7 things that you love about them. And then over breakfast on a Wednesday morning, you said, hey, that thing you did the other day that you thought was like really easy, it was actually really brave. Like there's a lot of people that wouldn't have been able to do that. That's really brave. Like,
that's great.
You'll have better relationships. And so all it takes as a goal is taking these big things we want out of life and then figuring out how to make them tactical and practical so you can actually do them and accomplish them and get to see your life change and your kids' lives change too. And so that's what's fun to me.
That's awesome. John, everything that we've talked about, your books, I'm going to link in the show notes. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This has been awesome.
I'm getting a neon sign next time. If you're listening to this, she's got a pretty cool neon.
You can watch on YouTube and you can also listen. So that's a nice little plug for YouTube.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
so people can see your big, subtle sign behind you.
Yeah. I wish it was bigger, to be honest with you. I wish this space was filled too with product.
You know what? That's a goal that you can have.
Yeah. I'll report from an igloo of my own product. I'll find some sort of igloo that I can get in and just wall to wall promotion. Babies need shoes, Paula. I don't know what to tell you. Babies need shoes.
Babies need lots of shoes. Yeah. Bags of gold.
Bags of gold are heavy. Sometimes I have to put banners behind you.
That's right. All right,
so
Johnny.
So funny.
The things that I hope you take away from that conversation. 1, kids have mirror neurons. How we talk about our work will impact how they talk about our work and what they think about our work. And like John said, if we continue to say it's the worst thing ever, it's going to take you away from mom and dad and your grandparents, it's going to take you away from your loved ones. We can't be surprised when our kids are 18 and they don't want to get a job, right? So the first thing is how we talk about work in front of our kids. And 2, invite them into the process. Invite them into your work, even if it's something that you don't enjoy. Like John says, that's a chance to show, hey, I am so committed to this family that even though it's not great right now, I am committed to helping to provide for this family. So those are two things that I hope you take away next week as we continue this conversation about work-life integration. I have my very dear friend, Dan Harris, on the show. Dan's my former co-anchor at GMA. He remains one of my best friends to this day. And Dan left ABC News a couple of years ago because he said he wanted to be a more present father. So what do you do when your career doesn't jive with your family? We're going to catch up with Dan. He's going to talk about how he made the decision and if he's glad he did. Now, I will tell you, this is a very spicy conversation. Very spicy. I left some choice words in it, but I do not want to censor my friend. You are going to love this conversation, though. Dan also talks about the pressure on men to provide for the family and how much fear played into that when he was walking away from ABC. So it's a conversation you guys want to talk about. We're going to talk about it next week and can't wait to see you then. I know you guys thought you were done with me, but not quite yet. I have one more thing to tell you about. If you're watching on YouTube or you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, don't forget to subscribe to the show. I don't want you to miss a single beat or a single conversation. And remember, my DMs are always open. Tell me what you want to talk about.